Roots Racing Culture is made possible in part by the contributions to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daynor Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. Today, we are here to celebrate jazz. Nope, not the professional basketball team that Utah's known for, but the iconic music genre that originated right here in America that provides the NBA franchise name.
Yes, yes, it's a long-running joke outside of the state that the only jazz you'll find in Utah is the sound of dribbling and sneakers squeaking on a hardwood floor. But for those of us who don't know, Utah's NBA team was originally based in New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, that's where jazz music was born among enslaved Africans back in 1819. So that was the name of the team before moving to Utah, and it just stuck around through the transition.
Okay, well, you know, enough about basketball. We're here to talk about music.
Let's
so as
it.
A music history buff, I am just super excited about our studio guests today. They're both legends in Utah jazz music. I want to start with Dee Dee Darby Duffin, who is, I am a huge fan of hers, and she is a big legend here. Dee Dee, tell us about yourself, please.
Well, I am originally from Baltimore, Maryland, and I came here about 30 years ago. And I've been, you know, singing and acting for the last 20 years, but I've been focusing for the last 8 on just jazz music, and it's been a wild ride.
And then, of course, we got George Brown.
George
the
W.
big
Brown.
George W. Brown Jr. Tell us about yourself, George.
Well, I'm from Monroe, Louisiana, and I've lived there, Arkansas, and Chicago.
I've been all those places. I lived every one of them places. Go ahead.
Dana was born in every one of those places.
I can see the mosquito bites on your arm there.
Anyway, that's right. That's Louisiana.
And I moved here from Chicago in 85 and got directly into the music scene. But my reason for moving here was with Union Pacific Railroad.
Yes.
But I retired in 01 and have concentrated pretty much my retirement years performing, playing. When I first moved here in 85, I didn't know anybody in the music scene, and I discovered that there's, Joe McQueen was one of the persons that was really known here for playing jazz. So I sought him out and went up to Ogden to meet him and introduce myself and get some guidance on how to maneuver through this minutia called jazz in Utah.
Which I'm sure has been quite the adventure for
you. It has been, yeah.
Yeah, and so you played at Sundance. You've been doing that for 9 years, right, at the Owl Bar at Sundance.
Right, we had a break there during the pandemic when everything was shut down. But we've been there pretty consistently. The first Friday of every month, you can find us there at the Owl Bar.
Okay, yeah, at the ski resort. Got it, okay.
A lot of good venues around here, especially some that recently have shut down. We were just talking about that backstage, like the Zephyr Club. Mm. For those of y'all that don't remember, there was the D.B. Coopers, and I remember the Zephyr Club. Zephyr was a fun spot. So.
Studebaker's is one I remember.
Studebaker's, yes, I remember. That was up on State Street in 400 South. Yeah. Yes,
long
that
before
was
I got here. Man.
Long before you were here. You know, it's so funny because Utah is just such an unlikely place where you would hear that there was actually jazz musicians. But there's a lot of jazz music here, though, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's keeping us working, enough to keep us working,
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
So, and now, George, you've played in some pretty big concerts and big shows before all over the country. Tell us about the beginning of the big sports. You know what it is. Tell us about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Super Bowl. Back in 87.
The very first Super Bowl.
The very first Super Bowl. I was a student at Grambling in Louisiana, in a city called Grambling.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate enough to be asked to come perform the pregame, halftime, and postgame show at the very first Super Bowl game.
No way! So, wow. Crazy! That's so amazing.
That was great. But strange you ask. During that time, although there were a lot of celebrities in the stadium, and But it was blacked out in L.A. because it was the very first one. Nobody knew it was going to take off the way it has. Mm-hmm. And so the stadium wasn't filled. Mm-hmm. But we did what we went to do, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Used to be just marching bands on the field. Now you have all. I paved the way for all these top entertainers.
Yeah, you know?
So what can I say?
Yeah.
So where's my money?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's that Los Angeles.
I have a question about your experience. You're just one of the iconic voices. I hear that you're even like, you have a mural with a picture of you in the city somewhere.
Tell us about this mural.
It's not just me. It's not just me. There are a number of amazing women who have, you know, changed what the state looks like. And I was just fortunate to be chosen as one of the pictures that's on the mural. But I'm on it. And
awesome.
It's down at the Zions Bank, you know, and so
I think that's just incredible.
So what are some of the key moments, as you guys are jazz aficionados, what are some of the key moments about this music genre in the state? I mean, we mentioned Joe McQueen, who used to play, I guess, probably at the Porters and Waiters Club, because he lived in Ogden and and that kind of a thing. When you think about the history of jazz music in Utah, what comes to mind? Is there any specific genre or something that really sort of identifies this state when it comes to jazz music?
One of the things that comes to mind for me is a man named Gordon Hanks.
Gordon Hanks, okay.
Gordon Hanks has brought more jazz to this town than anybody.
The GAM Foundation.
The GAM Foundation.
Yes.
What is the GAM Foundation?
It is now defunct. He had to shut it down. Money and, you know, everything got so much more expensive after COVID. But he brought in people from everywhere. And it used to be at the Sheraton.
Capitol Theater was his last location,
and it was amazing.
Was this like an annual event?
He brought in people every month.
Right.
Oh.
Jazz musicians from all over the country.
Wow.
We're really sad that he had to shut it down.
People like Clark Terry.
Cecilia McLaurin-Savant. I mean, he brought in some greats.
The real heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is exceptional.
He doesn't play a note. He just loves the music.
Yeah, he's not a musician.
Wow.
He's a pharmacist by trade. But that's one of the things that stands out to me, that in Utah, he was a treasure here for our vocation.
Yes.
And he supported it. And that's a memorable thing for me. And he's still living, you know.
Okay.
We talk quite a bit.
He should bring it back if they could find a way to get the money for it.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Yeah. You know, I was introduced to, in the 90s, I didn't live in Utah at the time, but I had some friends who were in Orlando who were from here, and they introduced me to swing dancing and swing music, which is, now I thought it was like jazz music because it has, you know, a lot of horns and that kind of a thing. So that seemed to have a really big impact on the sort of pop culture of Utah, as far as I could tell from people who were from here.
I think it was pop culture around the world, really, at that point in time.
Yeah, maybe so. But I'm curious to know, is there a specific genre or a specific song selection that you guys find is like really popular? People love to hear it around here.
Well, I don't know about popular, but I know what I like to sing. And I know when people come to see me, that's what they're coming to hear. And I sing the American Songbook, which is the standards of Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. And then I throw in some Nina Simone and try to throw in a few contemporary songs and make some different arrangements of it. But what I love to do is the American Songbook, because I don't think you hear it enough to kind of develop a love for it. And I want young people younger than me, to develop a love for it. And I think it's beautiful, and it's ever changing and ever evolving, and you don't have to do it the same way every time. And I think you can put your own spin on it, and that's why I love it.
You know, as a matter of fact, we had a little treat before the show where we were able to actually see you guys both perform in your element. And we would love for our audience to take a look to see how you guys are when you're actually out there doing your thing. And Didi, what are you going to be singing in this piece?
I'm singing Tain't Nobody's Business, originally performed that I know of by Bessie Smith in the 1930s.
Now, George, what are you going to be playing?
I remember Clifford composition written by Benny Golson for a friend of his. They played together, a trumpet player named Clifford Brown. And it's a ballad that kind of touches me, and I really like it. And to piggyback on what Dee Dee was saying, the people that pretty much follow my group, G. Brown Quintet, over the years have come to expect to hear people like Freddie Hubbard, Miles Davis, Coltrane, Stanley Turrentine. Those are the type of pieces that we do. And we've been supported for quite a few years playing that. And I just wanted to add a little something to, what Dee Dee said there.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
All right. Well, hey, let's take a look and see what you guys were doing earlier.
Nothing I can do or nothing I can say that folks don't criticize me. But I'm gonna do what I want to do anyway. I don't care if they despise me. If I should take a notion and jump into the ocean, 'tain't nobody's business if I do. If I go to church on Sunday and cabaret all day Monday, 'tain't nobody's business if I do. If my friends ain't got no money, and I say take all mine, honey, ain't nobody's business if I do.
I swear I won't call no coppers if I'm beat up by my papa. Ain't nobody's business if I do. Nobody's business. Tain't nobody's business. Nobody's business if I do.
Wow. Y'all were just, that is crazy. I just love that.
Yeah, now Take Nobody's Business by Bessie Smith is actually what, the?
1920s.
20s, okay.
1920s, yes.
Great, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
I mean, it's amazing a song can be 100 years old and still be that good.
I know, and it's, how long have you been singing?
So I've been singing since I was 6 years old. I sang at my grandmother's ladies who lunched parties where she'd fry some chicken and say, come on, baby, sing the song. But professionally with my band, I've been singing 8 years with the jazz band.
Wow.
So, yeah.
How long have you been playing, George?
Oh, my goodness. I started playing fourth grade. Mm-hmm. So I guess that must have been around 1957, long before you guys were here.
Yeah.
And started off in the fourth grade in Louisiana in elementary school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There on through Grambling and graduated from Northeast Louisiana.
But you did the railroad thing.
Yeah.
Did you keep up with your music during that time period?
Well, on the railroad, started working with them in 1971. But I never stopped playing.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the railroad supported my playing. It supported my family.
Supported your habit.
And I started with the railroad down there in Monroe, Louisiana, from there to North Little Rock, to Chicago. And that's when they asked me, Union Pacific Railroad, asked me from Chicago to come out here and be part of the training staff for the operating department.
Oh, wow.
And once I was here, that was the first time I'd ever had a job in rail industry that had definite hours from 8 to 4, 5 days a week.
Okay.
I thought I'd die and go to heaven. So that gave me more of an opportunity to explore the music scene, especially here.
Yeah.
And
your nights and weekends were open all of a sudden.
All of a sudden.
Yeah.
What is the jazz scene like today?
Yeah,
I mean, because, you know, I'm a big jazz music fan, and I often find it hard to just locate jazz music that's playing, because there used to be a jazz festival. Right? There used to be a jazz festival here. What is it like today?
Well, there's no jazz festival. I'm really sad about that, which is sad.
Every big city has
a
jazz festival.
Right, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Rocky Anderson that started it.
Yes, he started it, and you know, maybe if he comes back, he'll bring it back.
Wow.
You know, that could only be the hope. But I think the jazz scene, I've been able to work. There's a couple of organizations that helped me to kind of launch my career. Excellence in the Community is one of those organizations. And they try to get local musicians, not just jazz, but a lot of them are jazz artists. And so I've probably performed for them 6 or 7 times and was able to kind of launch and be able to play all around the state, all around, at least the Wasatch Front, and am now... you know, I have a manager now, and I'm trying to book tours, you know, and play outside of the state, and, you know.
That's big. That's big.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. And where do you like to play these days?
Other than Sundance, because you
know Sundance. Anywhere.
Yeah.
But we perform it in town here at Prohibition. It's on 61st South and 50th East, right off State Street, down there about a mile.
I love that place. Mm-hmm. And got good food. It's really throwback.
Another place in town is called the Woodbine.
The Woodbine.
Yeah, so in downtown, there's an area where they're remodeling downtown around.
They're remodeling the whole downtown.
Yeah, so
it's also Lake Effect.
The
Rabbit Hole.
The Rabbit Hole. Are those the same thing or two different things?
Yes, Rabbit Hole is in the basement of Lake Effect.
Okay.
Yes.
And Lake Effect is a venue? Is it a bar?
It's a bar.
Okay. But you can go down here, jazz. Because my son went to school out in California, and he came back for the summer, and he was like, "I want to go listen to some jazz." And I was like,
"Let me get the City Weekly."
They probably have people performing there 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Oh wow!
Are jazz fans here like Are they a good group of people? I mean, when you do a typical venue, do you have like a good turnout, or is it just?
I'm gonna just brag a little bit. It's okay. A little humble brag, but
you always brag.
I got something to brag about.
But I just performed at the Kenley Amphitheater in Layton, and the last time I performed there were 900 people that showed up, and this time there were close to 1,400, and they stayed and watched me in the rain.
Really?
Whoa. So yes, there are jazz fans here.
Yeah.
Well, let me add a little sum to that.
Come on now.
Excellence in the Community is another venue that showcases music, specifically jazz, once a week on Wednesdays. And my last two performances there was in December of 22 and February 1st of this year. Okay. And between those two concerts, we got over 1 million views.
I don't know if that, YouTube, he puts it on everywhere. Me too, same, wow. Yes.
I don't know if they were sitting in the rain listening to it, but.
So people are starting
watching,
to get to know.
But they were watching.
Yes. Yeah.
We're exporting our jazz.
I mean, we're trying. Trying to get
out of the country. Why isn't this more like, you would think if there was any sort of a musical genre where people were showing up with those types of numbers, why no venues here? Why don't they have a specific jazz club? Do you know why that's not the case?
Don't know.
I don't know. I could take a stab at it and say that most people think that jazz is only played in bars, and we're just not that kind of community.
Yeah, that's not really our thing.
But jazz is everywhere.
Yeah.
Jazz
yeah.
is everywhere.
And we're we have a team here called the Utah Jazz. People get out here, they're like, well, there's no jazz.
to the contrary. So I'm kind of curious, like, when somebody is maybe unfamiliar with this genre, like, what do you suggest they do to get to know, to experience? Because to me, jazz is different live than it is listening to it on like a radio or even a CD or whatever, the MP3, whatever. You like, if you're streaming it, because it's improvised, improvisational. There's a lot of like, no two performances are alike.
Right.
And how do you help somebody learn to appreciate that? What do you suggest they do to get familiar with jazz and start to understand it? Because it's a very intricate art form.
Well, this has been a dying venue as well. Jazz stations. The jazz that I perform is traditional and straight ahead jazz. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stations have gone by the wayside, and now they have smooth jazz.
Yeah, that's different.
You can find it anywhere and everywhere, which I have nothing against that. How do they get exposure to it? Listen to the parents' LP collection.
Yeah, right. You know? You dig through the vinyls in your parents'
right,
house.
Right.
Is there a specific performance that either of you can remember in Utah? I mean, you mentioned people sitting around in the rain because they didn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. But is there like a performance experience you had in Utah that's unique or really memorable that you've had? That it's like, well, you know, I don't think I could have had this thing happen anywhere else.
Yeah, for me, it was playing backstage at the Grand Theater on the night that my mother had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I remember knowing that I had to do that concert and sitting with my husband and my mother, and she was not waking up. She's still alive, but at the time we didn't know if she was going to wake up. And my husband said, "Listen, I will be here. I will stay here. You go and do this performance because you've got people waiting for you, and your mother's going to be sleeping. She's going to be here. She's got people who love her who are going to be here. And I will call you if you need to come off of that stage."
Okay.
And I went and I told the audience what was happening, and the support and the love that like came at me, the energy that came at me.
Wow.
I mean, I couldn't have asked for, a more supportive audience than that particular night. And it was like so many people were in her corner, and whatever they were saying, whoever they were praying to, you know, they went up. I could feel it. It was amazing.
All
it was
right.
amazing.
Yeah.
We'll get back to this conversation on roots, race, and culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
Hey guys, we're back with the podcast portion of the show. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to add on to something that Daner said, because he was asking about, you know, what younger kids can do, or people in general, to get interested in jazz. Recently, I walked into a room. My daughter was listening to some jazz music, and usually I'll listen to jazz music if I'm writing, or I'll listen to it in my car, but I don't usually play it in the house. And I just was like, I wonder how she got into this music, you know? And I personally got into it a lot from watching the PBS series, you know, just
Ken Burns,
The Ken Burns jazz from 1 to 10. Did you guys get
absolutely.
Isn't that amazing? Because it takes you through the history. Each episode is like 2 hours long, but it will take you through the history and the contributions, in particular, of African Americans from jazz music, how we just basically created this amazing art form. It's a uniquely American art form.
But it's a global art form.
Global.
Like, it's grown to that.
I mean, it's something to me that if a young person was even remotely interested in jazz, just go and start watching that series, and you can see the contributions that we've really given, not just in jazz music, but just in music in general.
Well, and you know, that brings me to an interesting idea here, which is, as far as I know, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, there are only two music genres that were originated right here in America, because everything else started somewhere else, maybe even long before America existed. So you got jazz, and then you got hip hop.
Right. Yes.
Right. Rock and roll.
Right. Rock and roll, do you think, but the Beatles, I mean, rock and roll was born out of R&B, though, wasn't
right,
it? I mean,
right. The Beatles didn't create rock and roll.
That's what I'm saying.
Don't you remember our cultural appropriation episode?
Come on now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, rock and roll, like that. What do you guys think of that?
It sprang from that.
Yeah. But jazz definitely started. I was just there. Jazz started in Louisiana. It started in New Orleans. So from the enslaved people and then the Creole people. And they, you know, you got the rhythms and the syncopations. And then the Creole people had, you know, put their little zhuzh in there. And then that's how jazz was created.
Yeah, they said on Sundays when they weren't, the one day of the week where they didn't work, they would all meet inside this square and they would just play their music from their own culture and that sort of thing. But it was a bunch of cultures, right? Because they didn't all come from one tribe in Africa or whatever. So they started blending their music and then improvising. And next thing you know, jazz is born.
And look where it is today.
Yeah.
Just look here in Utah.
Yeah. Well, Utah's...
Go ahead. You invited us to speak on it, but the university, right here, they have a jazz study program.
Utah, University of Utah has a jazz studies program.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Who are some other jazz musicians that we should be aware of here in Utah, that we should, you know, that you play with or that you've heard of?
Frederick McCray.
Yes, McCray.
From New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. We actually had a discussion with someone who was in the studio. I can't remember his name. It was he came back and told us, hey, have you guys heard of Frederick McCray? We were going to look him up. But yeah, tell us more about him.
Oh, we worked together. He worked in my group for 4 years, the last 4 years of D.B. Cooper's existence. And Frederick has played all over the place. When I first met him, he was playing solo at the Embassy Suite downtown. But he has a trio, and Frederick, in my opinion, is one of the best pianists here in town. He studied with Marcellus down in New Orleans.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, that's a name. I can see the wheels turning. You're like, how come he ain't?
But my sax player, Dr. Clifton Sanders.
Yes.
He's amazing. He's from Baltimore.
Oh.
We've been working together for over 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, not only music, but academically, he's the stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, he's VP of, he retired in June, but he was VP of Salt Lake Community College.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So I think this is what is interesting. Like, you sang for us during the show a song that is 100 years old, right? And you talk about playing with guys for 2 decades. And you would think that at some point, things would kind of run their course, and you'd feel like, we had a good run, it's over. What's happening in jazz now to keep it alive? How do you consistently sing these songs that have been around for so long and still keep it fresh?
Because they are fresh. You're not doing them the same way every time. I mean, you can certainly sing a standard, mm-hmm. but you can put your own stamp on it. You can arrange it any way you want to. I was just in New Orleans and I saw this woman sing from the song from The Wizard of Oz, If I Only Had a Brain. And she did a slow ballad version of it. I'm going to steal it. Wow. I'm going to borrow it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was amazing. And I was like, wait, I could while away the hours. And I was like, what? What is this? And
I think. Sultry.
Yes. A sultry If I Only Had a Brain. And I was like, wow. Neo Jones tore it up. And I got to see her and I got to talk to her. And what we said to each other was, do you know this? And she was like, no. And I said, do you know about this? And I said, no. I said, well, let's connect because there's enough. We both said it at the same time. It was really symbiotic. We both said, there's enough room for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I'm going to tell her what I know about the industry. She's going to tell me what she knows about the industry. Yeah. We're both from two separate states, but we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out how to collaborate or get it together, you know, so that we can all kind of spread the good news of jazz. And I think that's how it stays, is because there's something new happening, changing all the time in this genre. Yeah. And that's how we've stayed around forever.
So who are your some of your favorite local artists?
Or what are your favorite
influences? Well, I know she's going to go D, Darby, Duffin. I mean, there's got to be some local artists that you got here.
If you want to go out and listen to somebody, who are you going to go listen to?
I'm going to go listen to George.
George!
George!
Yes. I'm going to go listen to George.
Who else? You have some other ones? Or George, how about you? Who do you, when you want to go hear jazz, where do you go?
I would go hear Alan Michaels. Mm-hmm. He played with me as well for 4 years.
What's his instrument?
A sax player.
He's a sax player, okay.
Yeah. Student of Juilliard. And
that's a pedigree.
He's a great player, mm-hmm. you know.
I think it's.
I always wanted to play the saxophone. I feel like I could have been.
The sax is a very, very special instrument.
I'm sorry.
The sax is a great instrument. I have a cousin who is a trumpeter as well. He played with the Count Basie Orchestra and some stuff like that. He's from Mississippi and a tremendous trumpeter. I have to connect you with him. I think it'd be great for you just to know each other. But, you know. I find it interesting because jazz wasn't your first art form.
Mm-mm.
You started off as
I was an actor.
An actor.
Well, I was a singer, but I sung like I thought I was going to be like the next Whitney Houston or something, right?
Okay.
And then I got introduced to jazz as an actor because I got to play Billie Holiday. And this is before Audra McDonald played her, so, you know, before she won her Tony.
Take that, Audra.
Before she won her sixth Tony. But I was in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill here, and we did it twice because it sold out every night.
Wow.
So we did it in 2008, and then again in 2012, and I think we've got another one in there, so it's coming up in a couple years. But I wasn't a fan of jazz. And so when you ask how people get to be, you know, get to love it, I think they just have to listen to it and find the thing that sticks for them. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I could play Billie Holiday because Billie Holiday's from Baltimore and I'm from Baltimore.
Yeah, you said
and
it, I hear it.
Yeah, so when I went into the audition, the director was like, what do you think about her? And I was like, well, I think her voice is a little tinny. It sounds like it's being sung through a tin can. And you could see the director look at me like, did she just say what I think?
Are you trying?
But later on, after I got to know her and I started working with her, she said, when you said that, I said, but Billie is my aunt. Billie is like, she's like all of my aunties.
Yeah, I had
researched her and I was like, oh yeah, she sounds, the way she sounds and the way she talks, those are my aunties.
Yeah, those are your people.
And so she let me continue auditioning. And what she said was, if she can sing as much as she can run her mouth, then she's my Billy.
And you and showed her.
A
you
star
her,
was born.
And the rest is
a
history.
Star was born.
And she's been running her mouth ever since. Y'all are just great, man. I love hanging with you guys. Any parting words for our audience? Like, I mean, any thoughts that you want people to know about jazz in Utah, about where they can go to see it and so forth?
Well, like I mentioned before, once a week they have they showcase jazz mm-hmm. at Excellence in the Community at the Gellerman Center downtown. Mm-hmm. And jazz is never going to die. Mm-hmm. You keep hearing jazz is dead. Mm-hmm. Like Dee Dee says, you can always find something in it that you didn't feel before. Mm-hmm. And it's the launching pad for so many other genres of music.
Yeah, there are quite a few subgenres of jazz that have grown out of what started off as like straight ahead jazz, right?
Right.
And people have kind of adopted it and say, oh, I think it could be done like this.
Exactly.
I think, you know.
You have so many young people coming up now, even from Africa, having jazz bands that I'm following on YouTube, names I can't call right now.
Right.
But jazz is alive and well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for so the happy. For the media savvy youngsters, look up some jazz players. Just look up jazz on YouTube or whatever avenue you have to find it. You find something that you probably like.
That's great.
And there's enough room for all of us as artists. Like
right.
you don't have to feel like you have to take on anybody else's persona. You can have your own and still feel like you belong in this genre. You could do you and still feel like you belong and find work.
Yeah,
it's amazing to me from the 1800s when the jazz was given birth to, how many lives have been blessed by it, and how many people have made their livings from it. Mm. You know, from a little spot down there in New Orleans, mm-hmm. And people love it. Once you have affected it, it's hard to let go of that.
I think there's something, you know, for lack of a better term, very black about jazz,
yes.
you know?
The resiliency.
Yes, the resiliency,
it's stuck in there.
The creativity, the improvisation, the ability to take something that looks like it's going to go sideways and make something out of it.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Right
yeah.
there.
They hear it differently. We hear it differently.
Yeah.
And as a result of what we heard and our expression of it,
yeah.
it's just saturated the country.
Yeah.
Saturated the world.
You're taking
that
people
right
on
there.
A journey. Yeah. And that to me is I'm so glad you guys came and were willing to share your talents with us. It's like culture is a journey. It's a process. It changes. It evolves. And, you know, the fact that I know when I go and listen to you on stage, you're going to take what's happening for you right now tonight, like you mentioned the night when mm-hmm. your mother was in the hospital, and what you're feeling, you know, maybe you're thinking about something, a former lover, or what it was like being on the Super Bowl stage, or something, and you're going to take me on that journey that you're having right there, spontaneously, in the moment. Mm. And to me, that's why jazz is special, and it's our art form, because it's our way of telling the world how we feel,
yep.
and there's
Which
nothing
is,
anybody yes, can do about
amen.
It.
Amen.
Yeah. Blues, too. Blues, too, was that way. That was
yes.
how it all got birthed. It's a beautiful
that's
music.
Part of jazz.
Yes.
Yeah, blues Church, and jazz.
It's just, gospels in the field, the mm-hmm. morning, and all of that.
And it's moved all the way up. Yep, it's moved all the way up until today, where we're twerking. No.
No. And everything just goes there. We're gonna spin that into something better.
Yeah, that's an influence from somewhere else.
It's been a pleasure. You guys are amazing. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.